This is Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. It's day two of the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. 95 Wisconsin delegates are among the attendees, and we're hearing from them over the course of this week.
Yesterday, over breakfast, the Wisconsin delegation heard from Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers, and Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, chosen by Vice President Kamala Harris to be her running mate on the Democratic presidential ticket.
Producer Courtney Everett talked with two Wisconsin delegates who are also educators. Both were excited to have Walz, a former high school teacher, on the ticket. That feeling was echoed by Governor Evers.
Know what happens when you elect a former teacher? Begins the
done. I'm Ron Duff Martin.
Now, your full-time job is a social studies teacher in Eau Claire. How does it feel then to be here with that education background, you know, moving with that policy?
Being able to see us nominate for vice president a teacher, that is even more exciting. I mean, with Joe Biden, we had Jill, who's an educator as well. So we just got to keep that tradition alive now in the White House, always having somebody connected to the profession of education.
How does it feel to be here in Chicago?
Oh, it just feels really good. The energy, the vibe is just incredible.
I have to ask about the nickname Duff. I know this comes from Native American roots, but explain it to our listeners.
Well, Duff is a little bit of Native American, but it was also changed a little bit to make fun of me because I fell a lot by my uncle, and he kept saying, "You're falling on your Duff." But really, my grandma named me something that was related to dirt.
And what do you hope then to take away from this week?
Well, I hope to take back, you know, serving on the NEA Executive Committee, I hope to take back the energy that's here as we go from state to state to work with some of our real important or battleground states, I want to call them, for both the Senate, but also for the presidency, to be able to take this energy and go back and share that, but also just to continue to keep the fire burning, not only in educators across this country, but all people, because this is more than just public education. It's about saving democracy.
What we're going to show America over the next 3 days is what democracy looks like. It's inclusive.
I'm Tia Johnson. I'm also president of the Beloit School District Board of Education.
How does it feel to serve on the school board and then being here at the convention?
Nerve-wracking, because there's a lot going on in the school district. You know, we have a budget crisis that we're in and working through that, and I'm getting calls and questions about what's happening and what positions are getting cut and what positions aren't getting cut, you know, and trying to work on that while I'm here because I want to be full-time here.
What do you hope to take away from this week?
So I come from a bipartisan family. My father is a Republican, my mother is a Democrat. Yes, there are some things on the Republican side that make sense. Some stuff doesn't. You know, and they can say the same about us. I'd like to be able to communicate effectively to people that don't think voting is important. A lot of times we vote based off of what we were taught as children.
As an educator, what does Wisconsin need?
To pay our teachers better. We have to pay our teachers better, give them better work environment, better support. Really, our teachers need to be able to go in the classroom and not have the stresses and the burdens that they're experiencing right now.
And keep listening this week as we meet more Wisconsin delegates and hear the voices of Wisconsinites at the DNC.
Now, the Federal Communications Commission, or FCC, recently announced that they're adopting a new nationwide alert code for missing and endangered people.
The code will be similar to Amber Alerts for missing children and Silver Alerts for missing and endangered seniors, but it will apply to adults who don't fit either of these categories.
FCC officials say the new alert code will be especially beneficial to tribal communities, as Indigenous people are at a disproportionate risk of going missing.
Justine Rufus is co-chair of Wisconsin's Task Force on Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and rural coordinator for the Wisconsin Coalition Against Sexual Assault. She is a member of the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. Justine, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you. I appreciate being here.
How could this new alert system affect efforts to keep Indigenous people safe?
You know, this is one very large step that we're very excited about. having an alert system for people in our community that have gone missing is really important. One, I think that immediately this alert goes across the nation and across from county to county, jurisdiction to jurisdiction, is really going to help with the urgency when someone has gone missing and folks going into action to look for our missing relatives. One thing I also think that there's going to be an effect is the community at large really doesn't know or isn't aware that this is a crisis in Indian country, that this is happening all over the United States. And so, unfortunately, I think this alert also will help the community realize the crisis that we're facing in our communities.
I wonder how might this new code system dovetail into the things you're working on within the task force?
I think that the this is one of the things that we asked for in part of our report that we're creating for the state of Wisconsin. We're creating a report in Wisconsin on the status of missing and murdered Indigenous people in our state. And I think this is one of the things that's very unique about Wisconsin is we've also created more of an implementation plan along with our report, something more actionable for our state to get a hold of and really start making some steps to addressing this crisis. And so I think this is one of the areas that we also recommended is that there be a system, an alert system, when our relatives go missing so everyone is aware and can immediately start looking for our relatives.
Because the time is crucial when someone goes missing. Those initial minutes and hours, those initial days, why are they so important?
I think especially for our community, it's so important because we lack like boots on the ground, having police officers in our community. So this will be a national alert, statewide alert, much like the Amber system where every officer will get notice if a relative is missing. And so it really helps if, for us to have other folks be aware that there's someone that is missing immediately will help folks start looking for that person, even outside of our jurisdictions. And so I think that because we don't have the manpower in our own communities, this is really, really going to be helpful.
Let's discuss the crisis for a moment. You say this is really a crisis level situation and people aren't aware. Across the country, Indigenous people go missing at disproportionate rates. The federal government's Bureau of Indian Affairs says Native American communities have struggled for decades with high rates of assault and abduction and murder of tribal members. What can you tell us about the situation here in Wisconsin?
I always say that I think that the situation is impacting our community as well, our state as well. I know a lot of times we can't believe that this type of crimes is happening right in our backyard, but it is happening here in Wisconsin. And we look at these small communities that and small tribes. We have 11 federally recognized tribes and one unrecognized tribe in the state of Wisconsin. We see the same thing as a national level, that this is much higher in our communities. It really is a crisis. And it's really the public isn't aware of it because we don't have a lot of media attention around our relatives when they do go missing. And I think that we also do lack resources to help look for our relatives when they are have gone missing or being murdered. So I think that that is something that we're seeing right here in Wisconsin.
We're talking with Justine Rufus, co-chair of Wisconsin's Task Force on Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women, as we explore the FCC's new alert for missing Indigenous people, what it could mean for these efforts. Justine, Indigenous communities may turn to social media to spread awareness about missing community members. What effects do you see in the use of social media?
Social media nowadays is really key because so many of us are using platforms, social media. It really has, in some cases, made all of the difference. And so I think that I encourage folks when we have flyers to share that because it's so instant for folks to be aware that there is someone that is missing and the details of that missing person. And so, yes, social media can be instrumental in the recovery of our relatives in a very, very fast way.
Has it been filling a critical gap when traditional media outlets aren't covering a story about a missing person in a tribal community?
That's a great point, because social media, you know, is shared by all of us as individuals. And so, yeah, it really doesn't make a difference, because it doesn't rely on folks to pick up the story or to share that. That's just common people that are sharing that versus their own platforms. And so that makes a tremendous difference, in especially in Indigenous cases.
In the past, we've talked about how data is so crucial in determining the root causes of Native women who have gone missing or are murdered. Are the states and the tribes getting anywhere on this issue? Are they working together on this?
You know, as far as the data goes, that it's very... We're facing that here in Wisconsin. Even in our report, one of the things that we're most disappointed by is we won't have the data. The data just doesn't exist. And so I know that for folks, they need to have that number to show that there's a crisis nationally. But we know in our communities that there is a crisis. So for us, it's sad that we don't have the actual data or hasn't been captured. And so that's one of the things we have large recommendations on in our report. But as far as tribal communities in this issue, this is one crisis that I think all tribes come together about trying to address this, because it is so historical and has been not spoken about for generations, about the type of crisis that's happening in our community. So our tribal leaders are very supportive of the task force and the work that we're doing. And so that's one thing we're very proud of the tribes are banding together to try to address this crisis.
Justine, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. I appreciate your time today.
Justine Rufus is co-chair of Wisconsin's Task Force on Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and a member of the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa, talking about this new nationwide alert code for missing and endangered persons to support efforts in locating Indigenous women.
Coming up, we'll hear from Wisconsin College Democrats with their perspective on the party convention in Chicago and the November elections.
So the interest in young people in our democracy, in our country, in our political processes, it's only growing.
That's coming up here on Wisconsin Today.
It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Harvard Kennedy School reports that more than half of voters from 18 to 29 years old say they will definitely vote in the November election. Millions of young people have reached voting age for the first time since the 2020 presidential election.
But these young voters may not have the same concerns as older citizens when casting their ballots. Last month, we spoke with three college Republicans during the GOP convention. With the Democratic National Convention underway in Chicago, we're hearing from young Democrats about what issues take precedent with their voting group.
Alyssa Wahlborg is a student at UW-Whitewater and Southern Regional Director of the College Democrats of Wisconsin. Sam Brewer is active with College Democrats at Lawrence University, where he's a senior, as well as the Outagamie County Party. And Matthew Lehner is chair of the state's College Democrats and a student at UW-Eau Claire. I talked to them last week before the convention started. Matthew, let's start with you. Big news, obviously, for Democrats. President Biden withdrawing from the race a month ago, replaced by Vice President Kamala Harris at the top of the Democratic ticket. What was your reaction to that change?
Well, my first reaction was gratitude, right? Gratitude for Joe Biden's service to our country. I mean, this is an esteemed man with, you know, the greatest dignity and professionalism and love and patriotism for this country, and for somebody in that, you know, the presidency, right, the most powerful position in the world, to pass the torch to a new generation of leadership, I think takes some incredible humility and grace and patriotism. And so that was my first reaction, is, you know, thanks for Joe Biden for his incredible leadership as president of this country and for his years of public service. And then, you know, seeing how kind of things evolved and how the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, we very, very quickly moved to endorse Harris as the nominee of the Democratic Party. Just the overwhelming support that across the country from young people and old people that coalesced around, you know, Kamala Harris. And now this becoming sort of an election about change and electing a new generation of leadership. And I think Kamala offers even a bigger contrast to Donald Trump when you look at her record as a prosecutor versus Donald Trump's, you know, being a convicted felon, right? So I think, you know, there were so many great things that were happening, and I was so glad to see the energy behind Kamala Harris, and it was just so refreshing to see. And I think a lot of us can agree that, you know, when she became, you know, kind of the presumptive nominee, and when she became the only one that was running, you know, the Democratic Party was almost born again. There was an energy level that had not been seen, and it is just very exciting to have her at the top of the ticket now.
Alyssa, what has been the reaction among young voters in Whitewater and beyond?
Yeah, so Whitewater is like part of Woolworth County, and we're a very, very rural campus. And so it's a lot more purple, leans red a bit. Just having conversations with people on our campus makes you truly realize how blue we can get and how we can flip our district. We even flipped our city council blue. We got Democrats on our school boards. So there really is a passion that we're seeing kind of reemerge now that Kamala Harris is the nominee. And we're just finding a lot more excitement on our campus, even when we're canvassing, talking to, you know, Democrats or Republicans or moderates. We're still finding excitement in all aspects of those areas as we're connecting with voters and young people especially.
And Sam, what are you seeing? You're at Lawrence, you're in the Fox Cities, a place that can kind of swing a little bit. What are you seeing there when it comes to this change at the top of the ticket?
Yeah, so I mean, really, what we're seeing there is a lot of what we're seeing across the country. And I've been, I've canvassed in both the Fox Valley and back home in Minnesota this summer, and there's just been so much excitement around Kamala Harris and Tim Walz, and just everybody. You know, there's this renewed sense of hope, and everyone is just really excited to get out there and elect, you know, Kamala Harris and Tim Walz. And, you know, there's been such a renewed interest in volunteering. You know, party meetings are full. We've had renewed interest and interaction on social media with our Lawrence College Dems Instagram and TikTok. And it's just been really cool to see from, as Matthew and Alyssa both mentioned, young people, old people, everybody, people who were previously felt kind of not terribly happy with the nominees. And it's just been really cool to see that. And, you know, as for the Fox Valley specifically, I think, again, it's sort of like Whitewater. It's a very purple, tends to be a little bit more leaning red area. But what we saw on Tuesday when the two referendum questions were defeated, we saw that carried on the backs of the Bow counties, so Brown, Outagamie, and Winnebago County. And that was really encouraging to see, as we also saw during the Supreme Court election last spring. We've seen really renewed enthusiasm for progressive causes and really just ensuring that we have balance here in this state. So that's been pretty cool.
Wondering what kind of issues you are all hearing fellow students talking about as we move closer and closer to this election. Matthew, let's start with you in Eau Claire. When we're not talking about the candidates themselves, what are the big issues people are talking about?
When it's still front and center in front of across all voters' minds is reproductive freedom and reproductive choice. When Dobbs v. Jackson was handed down, was a very dark day for this country. And many people have not forgotten that. And especially young people. We don't, you know, voters don't forget too what politicians and people in power do to them. And we certainly will not forget what was handed down by the six right-wing justices on the Supreme Court. So that's one of the issues I'm hearing about. Another issue is climate change, right? We are in the fight for our climate. We're in the fight for our planet. And especially young people are looking to, you know, politicians of all parties and asking, what are you going to do to protect the environment? What are you going to do to reduce emissions? So I have the chance to, you know, grow in a world that has clean drinking water, has clean air, that, you know, is safe and sustainable, a world where I can have, you know, kids safely, right? So, you know, those are just two of the issues that I hear about a lot.
And Alyssa, are you hearing the same sorts of things on your campus?
I mean, climate change, reproductive rights, but also coming from Whitewater's perspective and our rural communities, we live in kind of a food desert. We only have like a small Walmart, and we're just getting an Aldi built, which is exciting. But most of it's just fast food restaurants, and there's not really a good place to go get really fresh produce. We're working on like farmers markets and like fairs and things like that. But for students, it's needing access to quality food. And we're working really hard to make sure that we also have like hospitals and healthcare access, because the nearest hospital to us, the nearest ER, is in another town, like 15 minutes away. But still, it's very important to us that we have access to our food, we have access to quality healthcare. And also, being from Whitewater, it is part of the reason I chose to go to Whitewater was because it was the least expensive UW system school in Wisconsin. And for a lot of students, it's financial insecurities that we have, that what Joe Biden did in his term is really try to cut the cost for students going to college. And that's something we're hoping to see, that Kamala Harris will continue on in her presidency. So Whitewater is really looking forward to the work that she does for our small campuses, as well as every campus in the United States and Wisconsin.
That's interesting. Alyssa, do you see students making those connections between these very, in some ways, local issues, food desert, lack of healthcare options, and what's happening on the national stage?
Yeah, for sure. People really look up to the president. It's sometimes these local governments can get really overlooked. So people really look towards, they're going to be looking towards Kamala Harris to answer their questions and help them out when it comes to paying for college and paying for food. But it's also something that our local governments are really, really looking forward to fixing as well. So having the connection between our national, state, and local governments, having all three of those combined together and collaborate and try to work on these issues for students, it's very, very important.
And Sam, I assume there's some overlap at Lawrence, but what kind of issues are you hearing people talk about there?
Yeah, so just to echo what Matthew and Alyssa have both said, choice has been a major driver on college campuses, especially at Lawrence, as well as a lot of those economic issues. And I think one of the things that I've been hearing specifically a lot is, like Alyssa mentioned, just the cost of college and the cost of really living and being a student at a time when you're not necessarily making much or any money being a full-time student. So, you know, I think working on ways that we can reduce the burden of student loan debt, reduce the cost of college, I think that those are all big issues that are sort of on the forefront of young people's minds as we head into the election. I will also echo the food desert comment. Lawrence is also in a food desert, so making sure that we have access to safe, affordable, nutritious options. And on top of that, I think, you know, the other really big thing as we sort of head into this election is just affordable housing. You know, a lot of, we're seeing historically low rates of home ownership for people under the age of 40. And I think a lot of that is driven by just, you know, the student loans and just how unsustainable in some cases it is to make a living out of college. And that's why it's so important that we, you know, continue to fight for workers' rights and continue to work to ensure that everybody is represented no matter what they do, whether you go to college, whether you choose not to go to college. It's important that everybody is able to have access to quality, dignifying, you know, work that allows you to pay the bills and have a little extra too, you know. So I think those are really the big issues that that are coming up, and really these pocketbook issues on the economy are definitely at the forefront of college students' minds.
We're talking about issues concerning young Democrats in this presidential election year. We have three college Democrats of Wisconsin with us. Matthew Lehner from UW-Eau Claire, Sam Brewer from Lawrence University, Alyssa Wahlberg from UW-Whitewater. Alyssa, I understand you're headed down to the Democratic Convention in Chicago to volunteer. What are you looking forward to there?
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to just meeting new people with similar interests and similar motivations. I'm also really looking forward to being in Chicago for the first time ever, learning more about the area and just connecting with everybody there and making sure that the DNC is able to be as unbelievable as it can be. We're very excited to see all these great politicians and work with them.
Matthew, there's a stereotype, I think, of younger Americans that they're disengaged, that they don't vote. And historically, young adults don't always vote at high rates. But hang on. The U.S. Census Bureau found that in the 2022 midterms here in Wisconsin, young voters turned out more than in any other state. Almost half of young people here went to the polls. Do you see younger people, and maybe not just Democrats, we talked to Republican colleagues too, do you see younger people getting more politically engaged?
Absolutely. And those assertions that are made about young people, that we're not engaged, that we don't care, that this is a generation that is not going to vote, and that, you know, we're just like the generations before us. I mean, those folks are dead wrong. You know, obviously you cited the data. You know, look at the Supreme Court election too. In 2023, we had more young people turn out at UW-Eau Claire's campus than voted in 2022. Janet Protasiewicz got more votes on the UW-Eau Claire campus than Tony Evers did. So the interest in young people in our democracy, in our country, in our political processes, it's only growing. And I think you're going to see even more record numbers in 2024, especially that this is a presidential election now. So, yeah, those assertions are dead wrong. And it's folks like those here in this interview, you know, working hard across our state and across our country to mobilize young people, to get them excited about getting them involved in the political processes. And I think that's only going to continue. And I'm proud to be a part of that.
Sam, voting itself is one way of participating, obviously. What kind of things are you seeing on your campus when it comes to other forms of political participation, volunteering, canvassing, you name it?
Yeah, so we have a great partnership with our local county party, the Outagamie County Democrats. If any of them are listening, shout out to you guys. We participate in a lot of their monthly canvassing, going door to door, talking to voters. And also we have weekly phone banks every Wednesday night. We all get together and make some phone calls to voters in the community. And I always say these are really the best way, you know, outside of voting, to engage with the electoral process, because not only are you talking to voters and making a difference, but it can be a lot of fun too. And you know, our group on campus is really close, and we really enjoy, you know, we have a lot of fun doing these things. And it's sometimes, you know, being on a college campus, especially a smaller campus like Lawrence, it can feel a little bit isolating sometimes. So, you know, getting out and canvassing is a great way to get to know the community and really, really feel like you're a part of the community and you have a say in it.
Alyssa, you mentioned you're in Walworth County, more of a rural county with Whitewater in it. Looking back at the last presidential election results, it's a county that Donald Trump carried pretty handily. What kind of things would you like to see Democrats do to reach out to a county like yours?
Probably just building on what we already have here in Walworth County. Walworth County Democrats, they have been a real strong force here in Walworth. I've worked with them all summer, and I'm planning on working with them, you know, for as long as I'm in college and possibly after. They do a really good job at mobilizing voters, young and older. We do canvassing a lot. We do phone banks. We do our meetings. They really are just really good at getting people out to the polls. And it's really just building on what we already have here, and just connecting with voters.
And Sam, you mentioned being from Minnesota. Well, Minnesota in the news, of course, supplying the running mate for the Democrats, Governor Tim Walz. Your thoughts about that hometown candidate for you?
Yeah, I'm super excited about Walz. I might be a little biased, like you said. Walz has been my governor, and I feel like he's done just a great job. I mean, it's incredible when you look at the kind of things that he's accomplished. He's provided free meals to children in schools. He's worked to allocate money towards affordable housing. He's helped out with enshrining reproductive freedom here in Minnesota. So, you look at these and many more issues, and he did this all with a very slim legislative majority. And you look at that, and Walz really has delivered for Minnesota, and I look forward to seeing him deliver for the United States. But yeah, very, very excited about Walz.
And we'll leave it there. Matthew, thanks for joining us today.
Yep, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
And Sam, thanks for being with us.
Likewise, thank you.
And Alyssa, thanks again for joining us.
Yes, thank you so much.
Alyssa Walborg is a student at UW-Whitewater, Southern Regional Director of the College Democrats of Wisconsin. Matthew Lehner, Chair of the state's College Democrats and a student at UW-Eau Claire. And Sam Brewer is active with the College Democrats at Lawrence University. Last month, we talked to three college Republicans to hear their views. You can find both of those conversations online at WPR.org. That's WPR.org.
Still ahead on Wisconsin Today, a Janesville water ski team was off the Rock River for much of the summer due to high water, but now skiers are back to their stunts.
44 people behind one boat takes a lot of coordination to get the ropes and the skis and the boat driver all set and pulling in the right direction at the right time.
Meet the Rock Aqua Jays on WPR News.
It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Wake boats and wake surfing are making waves on Wisconsin lakes and at times pitting neighbor against neighbor. The boats create large waves that people can surf, and wake surfing has grown in popularity.
But as Danielle Kading reports, some critics say the waves create concerns for the safety of others on the water, the environment, and spreading invasive species.
On a late July morning, Mike Scandon and Mark Mapes head out on the waters of Lake Minocqua in a Mastercraft X24. It's a boat designed for wake surfing.
It's a lot of fun. It's very gentle movements. You're moving everything in your body to do it. So it helps with agility, coordination.
That's Mark Mapes. The two head out about 800 feet from shore to an area that's 40 feet deep. At 69, Mapes says wake surfing is easier on the body than water skiing.
Okay, we ready?
Yep.
All right, going in.
Similar to water skiing, a wake surfer is towed behind a boat with a rope, but the person eventually lets go to surf the large waves left in the boat's wake. Scandon waits for Mapes' signal that he's ready to surf.
All right.
The two co-own a school that teaches people how to wake surf and operate their boats responsibly. Scandon says that means surfing in the deepest water possible, far from the shoreline. But just how far and how deep is at the heart of a debate making waves on the state's lakes. Critics of the boats say they need to be very far out to avoid shoreline erosion, property damage, and other problems. If boats are too close to land, Scandon agrees that's a problem.
I would say anyone can be a jerk in a boat. It's not the style of boat that causes the problem.
Wake surfers and the boating industry say that staying 200 feet offshore is far enough to avoid those problems. Jeff Miesman with the conservation group Last Wilderness Alliance says otherwise. He says the boat should stay 700 feet or more from the shore.
a lot of people have bad experiences with wake surfing boats and they want to do something about it. They don't want to see them on their lakes because they can't do anything else.
On smaller lakes, Meesman says people who paddleboard, kayak, or fish can't be near the boats without facing the risk of being swamped or tipped over by their large waves. Wake boat owners say there needs to be more tolerance and education. Jennifer Eckert says she loves to surf with her husband and two kids.
We do try to get out early when there's not a lot of boat traffic because it's also better for surfers to be out when there's not a lot of other traffic.
Some states, including Vermont and Maine, have statewide regulations on wake boats. In the last year, Republican lawmakers in Wisconsin introduced dueling bills restricting their operation that failed to advance. In the meantime, some towns like Farmington, Dayton, and Presque Isle are limiting their use at the local level. Presque Isle Town Supervisor Kathy Logan Weber says they're barring use of ballast tanks or other features that increase a boat's wake.
I'm sorry that we have to restrict the kind of activities that people may want to do on the lake, but I think it's just really important for the health of our lakes to restrict this type of activity.
She and others say evidence shows wake boats can cause environmental damage. Hans Meyer with the group Lakes at Stake says the boats create a jet of water toward the lake bottom while wake surfing.
These boats are stirring up the sediment on the bottom of the lake. So we're tearing up weed beds. We're interfering with fish habitat. That's a very serious environmental problem.
Wake boat owners dispute that they're the sole cause of any environmental harm to the lake bottom or shoreline. They point to studies funded by the boating industry that found 200 feet from shore is far enough away for waves to subside. Another study by researchers at the University of Minnesota finds the boat should stay as far as 500 feet from the shoreline. Scandon says he's not saying there aren't any problems with wake boats. With proper education, he thinks people can operate them in a safe, responsible manner. But he thinks limiting or barring their use because of a few bad apples on the water is the wrong way to go. Danielle Kading, Wisconsin Public Radio.
This is Wisconsin Today.
The Rock Aqua Jays out of Janesville are a high-flying water ski show team, notching more than 80 tournament victories over the decades, including dozens of U.S. national championships in their wake.
But the team's 63rd season has been a rough one at their home base in Traxler Park. Tornadoes and torrential rain caused the Rock River to swell. The club had to stay off the river for much of the summer, canceling 18 shows.
But now the skiers are back on the water, navigating the changing conditions and performing their high-flying tricks to the theme of Ghostbusters.
Brian Cullen is the announcer for the Rock Aqua Jays Water Ski Club. Brian, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you for letting me in. I'm really looking forward to our conversation.
And Brian's brother, Tim Cullen, is president of the Rock Aqua Jays. Tim, hello.
Hello, Kate. Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Tim, you've had to yield to Mother Nature this season, I gathered. Can you tell us about the high water conditions that you've had to work around?
Well, this year has been definitely a challenge. Normally, our season would consist of about 28 shows, starting Memorial Day weekend through Labor Day weekend. We did our first couple shows, and then Mother Nature took over and said, well, we're going to put you on the sideline for a while. So along came record rain in June and into July. And subsequently, since we ski on the Rock River in Janesville, we had to cancel 18 of our shows in a row. It's just a hard way to do a water ski season and prepare for tournaments if you're not actually on the water practicing and doing shows for our community.
When you were off the water, were you able to go elsewhere for the club and to practice? I mean, did other ski teams help out?
We actually feel like a traveling show right now because we've been to multiple locations throughout the state, from Burlington, Wisconsin, Twin Lakes, Wisconsin, to Madison, to Wisconsin Rapids, to Beloit. You name it, we probably skied there. And with a team our size, it's not really logistically easy to move an operation that has six boats and multiple docks and two trucks of equipment. So we really have to be efficient on what we can do and where.
Brian, I want to back up here for a moment. And if you could just tell us what this water ski team means to Janesville.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for the question. I'd like to think that we're ambassadors for the community. You know, we're all volunteers, so nobody gets paid to do it. but most of us live right here in town, or we live within a very short drive here. And when we do our shows, the best thing that we can do is put a smile on someone's face. When the family comes, they have relatives or friends from out of town, or people that are just doing the tourist scene in Wisconsin, and they come and they say, I never knew this was going on. It's so much fun. That to us is pure joy. And when we can do a show, it's awesome. And like Tim was just saying, when we had to cancel 18 of them in a row, people were starting to say, hey, are you guys still around? And the answer is yes, we are around. We're back for the rest of the month, and then we'll see what happens.
How did it feel to be back out on the water, Brian?
It was awesome. It was just so exciting. People were excited to see us. We have a lot of regulars that come to town. I have family and friends that also check out the shows. And to see people with a smile on their face, and before the show started, people were coming up and saying, we're just glad to be here. It was awesome. And the whole team felt it. And the size of the audience was really into the program. And it just makes you really realize how special of a thing we have going.
And you have seen this through decades. Brian, I understand you joined the team when you were 12 back in 1977 with your dad. Can you talk about this legacy and just the age range of skiers out on the water?
Great question. Yeah, you know, I guess I'm probably one of the more veteran people. I never thought of myself as that. But the reality is I'm on the other end. But with a program like this, we try to foster a family-friendly environment. And that means people, no matter what age you are, can get involved. So if you want to start out as a youngster skiing, you can. But also as a parent or as an adult, you can help out in boat driving capacities and concessions. You can even be up on stage with us if you want. And it really makes it fun. In fact, in our show right now, I think there's two or three families that represent three generations of family members in this team that are on the water behind the scenes. And it's made you really appreciate just how dynamic it can be. So it means a lot. And I'll probably, you know, die here someday on the river. Who knows? Hope not, but who knows?
That's kind of bleak.
Well, you know, well, we you know, you kind of find your spot and you stick with it. But I remember coming and watching these shows as a real young kid with my dad, and we got involved, and here we are 40 plus years later, and it's still fun. So that's awesome.
Skiing off into the sunset. We have brothers Tim and Brian Cullen. Tim is president, Brian the announcer of the Rock Aqua Jays of Janesville, as we talk about this treasured water ski team. Now, Brian, the theme for this season being Ghostbusters, I think we can name this song from 1984. Brian, can you walk us through how the routine showcases Ghostbusters?
Absolutely. So what we try to do is, we know our strength is in skiing. And then we also know that a lot of people have seen the movies over the years. And there was a resurgence a couple of years with the franchise rebooting, you know, some of the current versions that are in the theaters. We try to model a light scale version of that to an audience that we hope has seen the movies or is at least somewhat familiar to them. And we have a very simple story arc. We have the bad ghost, the good people, and we try to work to defeat the ghost and have a lot of fun along the way and showcase some great skiing in it. But rest assured, we want people to go home happy. So the story ends on a happy note.
That's wonderful. You know, I wonder, Tim, my favorite thing is seeing those really tall pyramids. And just how do skiers manage to do that trick? Can you give us any insight on these amazing formations?
Oh, those are fantastic crowd pleasers when you see a pyramid of 44 or 50 or 60 or a world record, which is about 100 people behind one boat. And now that I've transitioned from a water skier to a boat driver, I get an up-close look at how they do it. And when you're seeing a group of people come together like we have last night for our show, 44 people behind one boat, takes a lot of coordination to get the ropes and the skis and the boat driver all set and pulling in the right direction at the right time. And then they start building this pyramid, but what they're building on the water was actually practiced hundreds of times on land in an indoor gymnastics facility throughout the winter. Many, many times they do it over and over for repetition. And then when you get out there to the water, it feels like second nature. And we have some wonderful footage of the climbing of the pyramid. You can find it on social media and so forth and so on, from the point of a view from one of the top girls in the pyramid. And there's no way I would ever be up above what I can already stand right now, because when they're standing up there three tiers or four tiers or five tiers on top of the water, when you're moving at 25 miles per hour, that takes a special skill.
Oh my goodness. I can't imagine. But how do you manage your nerves as a boat driver?
Yeah. When I was a skier, I felt pretty confident in what I was going to do. But when I became a boat driver, I got more nervous for the skiers themselves, because you want them to succeed and you really want the very best. So it's a tough position to be in, especially in our show when we have multiple boats going in multiple directions. And it is like a well-choreographed football play where you have headsets and you have a plan of action and you have a contingency in case something happens. But it is a big operation, and driving a boat is a lot of fun, especially when you come to shows and tournaments where everything's on the line and you have to perform well. Being behind the boat is an exciting place to be.
Well, Brian, the latest championship being this month in Illinois, what does it take to repeatedly win national championships?
That is one of the biggest challenges, because last year we won nationals and it's very natural to say, you know what, I'm good. I want to take a break. I'm just not as motivated. But year after year, a lot of the people on the team have found that it's harder to repeat as a champion. And to me, when you can do that 2, 3, 4, or 5 times, or some of us have been there for all the titles, it really is a different set of mentality and drive and determination to want to do it. So it's really hard and we're looking forward to it. But if you like that surge of adrenaline, if you like a challenge, it is the best way to be involved. And that's the way I look at it.
Well, Brian and Tim, all the best to the team. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Tim Cullen is president of the Rock Aqua Jays Water Ski Club that's based in Janesville. And his brother, Brian Cullen, is the club's show announcer. This year's theme is Ghostbusters. And the ski shows they're back on Sundays at Traxler Park along the Rock River, with the final performance of the season set for September 1st.
As you've heard in our newscasts and here on Wisconsin Today, we're continuing our coverage of the political conventions this year with reports from the Democratic Convention in Chicago.
And we want to hear your thoughts. What do you want to hear from the Democratic Party during their convention week? What issue is most important to you? If you generally vote Democratic, are you excited or worried? Maybe a mix of both? Email wisconsintoday at WPR.org or call or text us at 888-642-0232.
And you can follow continuing coverage of the convention and of the campaign in general and what it all means for Wisconsin over at WPR.org.
Wisconsin Today is the work of a team of producers, hosts, and technical directors. Learn more about us at wpr.org/Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to WPR News.